Good morning. Welcome to another episode of Off the Chain with Dave and Steele. How are you, Dave?
Good morning.
Good morning.
I think this is the first time we've done this in the morning. So, my voice is a little bit deeper. I'm still cloudy eyes. Yeah, still working on waking up, but I'm ready.
You know, you ever watch the show Night Court?
Not for about 20 years, but I have seen it, yes.
You know, they had an episode where it was Day Court and all the characters had totally different personalities. Like, Bull was really cheerful and excitable, and I think Roz was really kind, and John Leguizamo wasn't always trying to hump everything that moved. It was, everybody had different personalities at different times of the day, so we'll see whether that ends up being the case for you, Dave.
It is. Usually, like, I'll get to work. I start work at about 7. I won't talk to anyone for at least 2 hours. I'll just kind of walk around with a scowl. Then, like, later on, I'm super friendly and nice. But the first 2 hours, like, don't even look at me. I can't do it.
I think that's going to bode well for our podcast this morning. That's great. Well, fortunately, we are joined today by a guest who will hopefully lighten the mood for you, Dave. I've got my friend Oliver here.
All right.
I'm so happy to be here.
And we're happy to have you. All right, so we've got a lot to cover today. We're going to talk about Disney World. We've got a bit of small talk. We've got an ask off the chain. We're going to talk about comics and graphic novels, Unchained Melodies, and some book wisdom. But let's start with Mickey Mouse Heaven. Dave, you just came back.
We went to Disney World. It wasn't really my top choice for a vacation. The amount of money we spent, I would have much rather like Peru or something, but I guess I'd be a terrible person if I complain about Disney World, and there's stuff I could complain about, but there's some awesome stuff as well, and I just want to talk about the stuff that's awesome.
Great. Let's hear about it. I don't know anything awesome about Disney World.
Have either of you guys ever been to Disney World?
Is that the one in Florida or California? I always forget.
Disney World's Florida, because it's the whole world of Disney rather than just a land.
I was there when I was a toddler, and my one memory comes from a photograph where I just have spaghetti all over my face, so I'm eager to hear what you have to say about it, Dave.
Yeah, Dave, I've only been to Disneyland, never been to Disney World.
Oh, geez, yeah, you're missing out, Steele. Cause World just kind of takes it to the next level. There's just a handful of things that were awesome. The first thing I noticed is I have 3 toddlers, so strollers are very important for this whole experience. And shockingly, strollers are very important for tons of people. There's strollers everywhere. In fact, you see like 10-year-old kids being pushed in strollers, which I didn't understand. But I was pushing my 2-year-olds in strollers. But you have to put them somewhere. And there's thousands of strollers in Disney World. So, Steele, what could possibly be a solution for this? There's thousands. There's tons of strollers. What would you do?
I would institute some kind of valet parking situation, where you had Disney-themed characters take the strollers away. They're, like, dancing as they go, and then they return them to you when you're done with your ride.
That's pretty much what they do.
Are you serious?
They have a designated stroller parking area, and there's people, they're not actual characters, but there's people in their little Disney suits, and they are handling the stroller parking. It's valet. If it wasn't, it would just be a huge mass of strollers. It would be a disaster, but these people are in charge of the strollers. And I'm like, this is awesome.
So I have a question for you, Dave. With 3 toddlers, do you have multiple strollers, or do you have like a triple-barreled stroller?
You have to go with multiple. If you do a triple-barreled, it's just pandemonium. People, like, everyone's stopping you. Like, triplets? Triplets? What? Huh? When you have – I have a double and a single, and people, like, they don't even – no one connects it. No one, like, knows what's going on. It's the way to go.
So it's mostly for camouflage purposes rather than convenience, is what you're saying.
Well, inconvenience. We used to use a triplet stroller when they were real little, and it's just unwieldy. Like, you can't take it anywhere. The maneuverability is, there's none.
So you do have triplets, though, right?
Yes, that's correct.
Okay. He just doesn't want anyone to know when he's in public.
Secret triplets. Okay. Yeah. All right.
Yeah, I'm not that friendly, Oliver. Everyone wants to stop you and talk to you. Hey, triplets, let me talk to you about this. Like, maybe next time.
All right, so that's the first great thing about Disney World, the stroller parking.
Yes. And
hold on.
really.
We don't want to pass this over too quickly because you were also mentioning that there are a number of 10-year-olds riding strollers in Disney World.
Yeah, we should talk about that.
Yeah. That seems like a big advance in human civilization.
I kept talking to my wife. I was like, wait, what's going on? Like, I've got my 2-year-olds in strollers, and that makes sense. But everywhere I turn, I look in a stroller, and I'm expecting to see a toddler, and it's like a kid with facial hair. There was lots of big children in strollers. If I'm going to Disney World again and my children are 10, like a stroller's just not going to be an option. I don't know. It was amazing.
I think what it is they're saving their legs for a full day in the amusement park. They're like, I know I've got a lot to do today. I want to save my legs. So, Mom, you're going to have to push me.
I think that's it. Have you ever seen Wall-E steal? I think that's the basis of their whole civilization in Wall-E. In the future, no one walks around because they want to save their legs.
Exciting. All right, so that's the first positive, or the first two positives. What else is great about Disney World?
It's kind of cool. They keep anticipating different situations. Like, I feel like Disney World gets feedback and then they do stuff about it, like the stroller parking attendants. And then Disney World, like 10 times a day, there's massive parades and everyone stops and watches the parade. It's just all the time. And we were about to leave the park and one of these parades is happening. And I'm like, oh man, there's no way I'm going to be able to maneuver a double stroller out of the park at this point. There's a parade. But Disney World's thought of that. They have lines on the sidewalk where parade watchers can stand. And they can't stand on the other side. There's people all over enforcing this. So it was actually easier to get out during the parade because people were just standing there. Any problem that you could anticipate at Disney World, at Walt Disney's already anticipated it and he has a solution.
So you're saying it's basically a fascist police state, but it makes it efficient to move around.
I was going to go with well-oiled machine.
Okay. Two different perspectives on the Disney Empire, but both equally valid.
There was one ride that we got on. It was in Mexico in Epcot Center, where at the yeah, I was angry because of how fascist police state the ride was. They're yelling at me. They wouldn't let me sit on the same row as my wife, all five of us, and my daughters are like standing, and they're like, "No standing." My daughter's two. It's okay. I'm holding her.
Wow.
So a
But
well-oiled fascist machine.
yeah.
In song.
Yeah.
I'd love to see that on a tourist brochure.
But then definitely my favorite thing in all of Disney World is a place called Club Cool.
What?
Hey, what do you get? Just throw out some guesses. What on earth do you think Club Cool would be?
I'm picturing lots of cool sunglasses.
Ooh. Mickey Mouse hats. Maybe Club Cool is the place where if you get overheated, you go in there and there's like teenagers with little spritzer fans and water bottles. They're just spraying you down. And you're like, oh, glad I made it to Club Cool.
Well, we were strolling by. I'm driving the double stroller. My wife's driving the single, and I see the sign for Club Cool, and I start making fun of it because I'm like, Club Cool, that's like the dumbest name in the world. What does that even mean? And my wife says, I think that's where you get to taste sodas from all over the world for free. I'm like, what? I suddenly turn the stroller to go in and I nail like the curb and I don't have the girls buckled in for some reason. So they both face plant on the cement and because I'm so excited. They're both crying, but I'm still so excited.
You're
I'm
like,
just
get up,
throwing
kids.
back at
Get
the
up, kids.
stroller.
I've discovered paradise.
And I get in there and it is. There's eight sodas from all over the world and we're just drinking soda and once you, if you give a toddler soda, like they're gonna stop crying pretty quickly. And it was awesome.
Wow. So why is it called Club Cool?
I don't know. I said that I'd never put that
And the best soda? Which country had the best soda?
Peru. I think it's called, I can't even remember, Kona Cola. It was delicious.
It's
A
just
little
the generic
bubblegum
version
flavor.
of Coca-Cola, Kona Cola.
No, a little more refreshing. Kind of bubblegum flavor. What country would you guys guess would have the worst soda possible?
England?
Good guess,
How about you,
Oliver.
Oliver? What's your guess?
I was going to say Germany.
Yeah, that's pretty... Yeah, very efficient flavors, though.
I was actually a little bit surprised. Italy. It was a flavor called Beverly. That's just simply called Beverly, and it was terrible.
Well, they do really excel at wine. Maybe soda, not so much.
Yeah, but it's cool that they name their sodas after old women. Beverly flavored. You should start that at your nursing home, Dave, if you work at. Just name soda flavors after what old ladies, like the room smell like. Edna.
I'll think about that.
The old Edna, the Eunice, the Beverly.
The Beverly has a surprisingly bitter flavor. But I'm just going to talk about one more thing that I was probably my actual favorite thing at Disney World. My girls were little. They couldn't ride most of the rides, but they loved, and I was a little surprised. They loved going to meet the characters, Chip and Dale, Mickey Mouse, Goofy. You'd have to get in a line to meet them. And my girls, they don't even want to hug me, but they run up and they hug Chip and Dale just repeatedly. They're so excited to meet Chip and Dale. And one of my girls, when she first met Goofy, she didn't hug him. So she talked about it for a couple of days, like expressing this terrible regret that she wouldn't hug Goofy. So the next time we saw him, we got in line and we talked to her. And she's like, yeah, Goofy. And she ran up and hugged him. And it was just beautiful.
So that is sweet, Dave. Although it was probably an awful place for you and your wife to be. At least the kids had a good time, huh?
Yeah, they got to have some beautiful character love. And it was terrific.
Were there any characters who did not have any lines of people waiting for them that were just like the unloved, forgotten characters?
there was a bear, the Disney bear, still, that I didn't know existed, called Duffy. Duffy, the Disney bear, and not very popular.
Wow. That's great, Dave. So Disney World is in Orlando, is that right?
Just outside Orlando in Kissimmee, Florida. Walt wanted to have just a large piece of acreage to be able to do anything he wanted with, and he does.
Does it have its own zip code?
I don't know. It's got its own Club Cool.
Close enough. Well, thanks for telling us about Disney World, Dave. We've got a really exciting section of small talk now for you. And for those of you who are new to the podcast, Dave, can you explain the premise of small talk?
So I'm an awkward man, if you didn't know by how I was just talking and speaking to Steele. When I get into social situations, in order for me to succeed, I have to plan ahead of time what I'm going to do. So small talk is just arming you with stories, with interesting things to say, so that when you're in a social situation, a party, a gathering, whatever, you have something neat to say that makes people think, like, that guy's actually interesting, even if you're not.
Great. Well, Dave, prove your point. What do you got?
So Steele, I was listening to a podcast the other day. Alec Baldwin was interviewing Jerry Seinfeld, and it was great. But something was revealed by Jerry Seinfeld that is currently changing my life. Jerry Seinfeld's way into transcendental meditation.
Oh, TM.
Have either of you guys ever heard of that?
Oh, yeah.
We're both devotees of TM. Come on, we live in Madison.
The TM headquarters is near where I grew up, Fairfield, Iowa.
Yeah?
Yeah, that's the Maharishi Institute of Management.
Well, then you guys definitely know more about this than me. But Jerry, so he meditates twice a day. He's got his mantra or whatever that he says, and he credits this to just his even-keeled personality. He never gets angry. He's just a happy guy, and he totally credits transcendental meditation to it. And I looked it up. I was reading about meditation. I've been trying the past few days to do a little bit of meditation. I don't think I'm doing transcendental because they want you to pay for lessons. Oliver, true, what can you tell me?
Thousands of dollars.
You got to pay to pray, huh?
Or have you come into contact with TM a lot living in Iowa or what?
I had some friends who were from Fairfield, and so I've been there. A lot of the houses face the same way, which is part of the TM thing. The Maharishi School of Management,
Institute of Management, yeah.
Yeah, has a big... The best way I know how to describe it is a floating dome the dome itself doesn't float, but it's kind of an outdoor dome where meditators can practice, like, floating meditation, levitating. I've never actually seen it happen, but there's this dome, as far as I can remember, that is
you can go to it to float.
Yeah.
You float in the dome. So yeah. The dome doesn't float, but people float in the dome. That makes sense. Of course.
So you haven't seen the floating, but do you believe that that's happening? Do you feel like that's the TM gets you there?
Yes, 100%.
You know, I think whatever people want to do is cool. if they think they're floating, then I believe it.
Hey, I wish Jordan was on the podcast. Beautiful. You should ask Jordan about this, because when we were freshmen, I was in the dorm room, and I was transcendentally meditating, and I was like, hey, you're supposed to be able to levitate, and Jordan's like, that's not real, and I was like, I don't know, guys, I feel like I'm getting lighter. He teased me about that for years, so he could probably tell the story a bit more ridiculously than I. But I have a great passion for TM, Dave, and it comes from my deep abiding love of Donovan, the folk singer.
Oh, wow.
So he was really a big devotee of the Maharishi Mahesh Yogi. And my friend Jack Bangerter and I were huge fans of the Maharishi Mahesh Yogi and the Maharishi Institute of Management. When you take standardized tests, you know, if you do well, you get all those college mail that gets sent to you. We used to throw it all away, except for any time we got something from the Maharishi Institute of Management, we would always write back and request more information. And so in the end, they had sent us like 4 brochures. They sent like 2 or 3 like large manuals. They sent a VHS like explaining more about the Maharishi and the school. We found out tons about this place. And so we were always talking about how we were going to move to Fairfield and go to the Maharishi Institute of Management. The best part about the place is that their cafeteria only serves vegetarian food. That was the part that really stuck in my mind.
There's great Indian restaurants in town.
I imagine.
Which is, you know, sort of unusual for a small town in Iowa, but not Fairfield.
Cool.
And what's so compelling about all this is the Beatles bought into it.
Yeah.
Jerry Seinfeld's into it. Like, these celebrities, I guess I'm buying into it because of these celebrities. I'm like, oh, if it works for Jerry, why am I not doing it?
It's the cool club.
Yes. Awesome. All right. So thank you, Dave. Transcendental meditation. Let's all buy in. It's the religion of the week. I know it's not religion. It's a spiritual practice.
Steel, you're floating. What's happening?
I felt myself getting lighter. All right. So here's my contribution to small talk. I read this fantastic story about a place that sounds a bit like heaven on earth. This is the Rocky Mountain Land Library. Anyone heard of this before?
I don't think I have.
No.
So there's these two people who have worked for like 20 years in a Denver bookstore. The man's name is Jeff Lee and the woman's name is Ann Martin. And their lifelong dream is to build a rural live-in library where visitors can connect with books and with untamed nature. So there's an abandoned ranch about 2 hours north of Denver that the city of Aurora is letting them have on like a really sweetheart lease deal.
Wow.
They have over 32,000 books, many of them about the Rocky Mountain region and the West generally. And they want to build artist studios, dorms, and a dining hall so that like academics, researchers, writers, birders, hikers, and people who love the West can come and live in at this library art center and learn about the West and connect with the Western Rocky Mountains.
Well, that sounds pretty dreamy.
Doesn't that sound awesome?
Sounds amazing.
So
my first question is, when are you moving there, Steele? Like, have you packed your bags or what?
Yeah, I hope to be the poet in residence. That would be kind of nice, huh? So they've poured like $250,000 of their own money over the last like 30 years into building this library collection and making this happen.
Wow.
And it looks like they've got like a public WordPress site explaining it with lots of posts, and a big thing was written up about it in the New York Times, and I guess like 800 people poured in writing, offering support, writing letters, and donating labor and things. They still have gathered just under $120,000 of their own money, and they estimate that they need about $5 million. So they're a ways away from achieving the dream. But for me, it was this beautiful, super grassroots, it's not... Normally you'd think about like some billionaire who retired from Amazon doing this or some wealthy foundation, but it's just two people who love books, the book collectors, and this is their dream to do it in Colorado. And I thought, what a beautiful story. It seems like right up my alley, right up Oliver's alley, and something Dave would make fun of. So I thought I'd bring it in.
It is pretty inspiring. Are they hiring?
Yeah, exactly. I wish
I'm sure they'd give you a very competitive wage, so I'd look into it.
Yeah, you know, that all that bookstore money just pouring into the business. This is the best part, actually. Can I just share a little passage from this news story? The two of them, their darkest hour came in 2012 when they were forced to move from their rental house after it changed ownership. Doesn't exactly like spire confidence in their financial solvency, but they had no idea where they would put their books for several months. And the head of a storage and distribution company eventually offered them free storage space. And it took them 1,026 boxes and 3 full-size moving trucks to move their book collection.
Jeez. I bet those were some heavy boxes.
No doubt. I thought that was pretty hardcore, pretty amazing.
Wow.
There used to be an old used bookstore at the end of my street I live on. And the lady, she got evicted. I don't really know why. So she had to close down her bookstore. So I had to help pack it up. It was an intense packing situation. She didn't have 32,000 books, but like 5,000. So now I'm pretty sure they're just all in her house now. She just has a house with every wall lined with books.
Oh, that sounds like a dream. And Dave, just to fill you in, the reason she was evicted was because she didn't pay her rent. And the reason she didn't pay her rent is because she ran a used bookstore.
Yeah. Thanks for the update. I appreciate that.
Yeah, no problem. All right, so that's Transcendental Meditation, and that's this writing retreat. Oliver, small talk, what do you got for us?
Yeah, what I wanted to talk about is that I keep hearing about really great TV shows coming back for reunion shows. And the first one was Arrested Development.
Yes, which was amazing.
It was amazing. The next one I heard about after that was Twin Peaks, which I understand is having some contractual negotiations right now because David Lynch doesn't think he was offered enough money to be part of it, but they don't want to do it without David Lynch.
That would blow up. If Twin Peaks came back, that would be the potential to be super popular.
Well, all the cast got together to put together a YouTube video trying to convince David Lynch.
Wait, so the original cast is going to be doing the remake?
If it happens. If David Lynch agrees to it. So there's that one. I also heard that the cast of Wet Hot American Summer is coming back together. And this last one that I heard about is that the whole cast of Full House, the whole Tanner crew, has signed on to come back together for a reunion TV show that I understand will be airing on Netflix. I don't know when, but it was just confirmed yesterday, breaking news, that everyone has agreed to be back on it.
Whoa, and Uncle Joey's in? We got Uncle Joey?
Yeah.
Yeah, he's the key. He's the linchpin. Without
Joey,
him.
Jesse, Danny, you know, they're all there. And in the article that I was reading about it, it dropped a plot point that DJ is now a widow.
What?
So.
Oh, no.
I'm pretty interested to see how they deal with the passage of time there.
And DJ's meth habit, all that stuff.
Yeah, and I'm curious if they'll use the same theme song or, you know, just how much they'll update it for the new century. But
so
I'm
they're
going to
it's going to be Full House 2 or Full House again, or what are they going to call it?
Well, you know what they're going to call it, Steele.
I don't yet.
Are you ready for this?
Yes.
Fuller House.
Oh, wow. And then when they do the third in 20 years from now, it'll be Fullest House.
We can only hope.
Yeah.
Wait, is that proper English? I'm assuming you both are English majors in some Fuller House. Is that a way that we speak in America?
But who would watch a show called More Full House? Well, you know, probably people would.
More Full House. I like that. Actually, because it would be that actually could be clever because you're saying it's not Full House, it's more Full House.
Like or, some more what?
Yeah, there you go.
Some more Full House.
Some more Full House. And is it going to be set in San Francisco in that same house? Because people go there all the time. To tour at the Sisters or whatever it's called.
That's a good question.
Okay.
We'll have to wait and find out.
The suspense is killing me.
Yeah, I know.
Now, that's a conversation piece. Everyone who's roughly within like a 20-year age band would be willing to talk about Fuller House.
Right?
Yes.
Yeah.
I clicked on an article the other day where Uncle Jesse was outside the Full House in San Francisco, and like no one recognized it was Uncle Jesse, so he was doing like a selfie with people not paying attention that it was him. Like it was magical just to see that Uncle Jesse selfie in front of the Full House.
the rich irony of that, that people are coming to this house to pay tribute to this TV show that they loved, but missing the star, a star, or I don't know, a minor star of that very TV show.
Maybe if he had a triple barrel stroller with him, people would pay attention.
Oh, they certainly would.
Oh, man. So are the Olsen twins in on this?
Well, I'm not sure.
Okay.
The details are a little fuzzy.
Wait, because in the original, there weren't twins. It was the two girls playing one character.
Right, yeah.
That'd be cool if they recreate that.
Yeah.
Oh, man.
And my other issue, Oliver, is that you started this little segment by saying great shows. Like, Arrested Development, Twin Peaks, yeah, great shows. Full House, that's kind of one of those shows that as you're watching it, you're like, why am I doing this? But I've watched every episode that's ever come out, and I don't know why.
Yeah, Dave, you're right to caveat me there.
Memorable shows, perhaps.
Right.
Dave, did you watch Twin Peaks?
Yeah, I watched up until you find out who killed, what was it, Laura Palmer?
Yep.
And then it just fell apart. I just stopped watching it.
Yeah.
Spoiler alert, everybody. Laura Palmer dies in Twin Peaks. Thanks a lot, Dave. Okay.
That didn't give away the identity of the killer, though. I would never do that.
We'll save that for minute 44. So if you're listening, fast forward to minute 44, where Dave reveals the killer of Laura Palmer. All right. Okay, anyway. I'll cut that off. So that was Small Talk. Armed for your next awkward conversation, you can talk about the Maharishi Mahesh Yogi and his floating dome in Fairfield, Iowa. You can talk about the ranch in the American West, which may be built, housing lots of books and nature. And you can talk about Fuller House. You are armed and ready. Well, we have some questions. Our listeners are ever eager to ask questions and get our expertise. This is a segment we call Ask Off the Chain. Dave and Oliver, I'm really counting on you for this one. This is Strider McCrory from Gulfport, Mississippi. So Strider writes, I've just been offered a new job, which I'm really excited about. However, the job requires relocation, which I'm nervous about. Any advice for settling in a new city or ways to make my move better? Also, how do I convince my new neighbors that I'm off the chain?
Oh, so Strider, I'm glad you asked this question. Because I'm going to relocate, actually. I don't know if you know, I'm going to move to a town called Snowflake, Arizona, probably pretty soon.
Wow.
The
least accurately named town in America.
it's a beautiful place. It's high plains desert where nothing grows. So I'm excited. But I was up there this week doing a little job interview, and I met some of the medical providers up there. And I have the perfect answer for you. 30 years ago, a doctor moved to Snowflake, and people immediately loved him. And I'm going to tell you why. He has maybe the most impressive mustache I've ever seen in real life. He's got, it's super long and bushy, and you think it's going to come out to curls on the end, you know, that he's going to curl it up.
Uh-huh.
But no, he twists the mustache together, and it comes out probably on either side of his face about 4 inches, just these straight points straight out of his mustache, and it's amazing.
So how does he achieve this look? Is there some kind of product involved or just engine oil?
I think it's just twisting. Like, it's, you can see that he's twisted the mustache, and it took the town by storm. People love this guy. 30 years later, you know, people love to go in and be treated by him. And he was super friendly. Like, of course, the first thing I talked to him about is his mustache. And he was awesome. He's like, yeah, let's discuss my mustache. He had no problem with it. So I think, one, you go into town with some type of readily identifiable thing to talk about, and then just talk about it. Like, if I'm pushing a triplet stroller in Snowflake, I need to just be ready to be like, yeah, man, triplets, let's go into this.
Great. That's good advice. Oliver, you have any insight into this?
Well, Dave, you kind of took the words out of my mouth, because I too think that great facial hair is a way to make any transition smoother and a way to convince new neighbors that you're off the chain, Strider. I guess another thing that I might add is, you know, one perk of moving is that you get those coupons in the mail, because all the big box stores somehow find out that you've changed your address. And they send you all the coupons for all the things. and that's pretty exciting.
Yeah, that's great. That is a huge perk of moving. I would say, now I'm someone who's moved, I attended, I think, 16 schools by the time I'd graduated from high school, something crazy like that. So I've moved a ton. My advice for moving, I got two pieces of advice. One that's like human social and one that's just practical. The human social one is, I think you guys both covered it, but it's the need to be engaging and flexible, to be willing to talk about whatever it is people notice about you. Because you're not really able to shape what people's initial perceptions of you are or how they've come to see you right away. But you can show them that you're open and willing to talk about yourself or whatever they notice about you, and be flexible and willing to form new relationships. That was really awkwardly expressed. So
that
I'll
was nice, Steele. That was nice.
And the practical thing is, when you're moving, just take all of your clothes and put them in trash bags. Don't box your clothing. It's so crazy. And especially if you have stuff hanging up on hangers, get a big trash bag, put it over as many as you can, keep them on their hangers, tie the trash bag up at the top with the hooks of the hangers coming out, and then when you get there, you just put the hangers on the shelf, pull the trash bag off, boom, saved you hours.
That is a tip from someone who's moved a lot.
Yeah. It might look ratty, but it doesn't matter how it looks, because it's only going to be in the moving truck for a short amount of time.
Would you recommend scented trash bags or unscented?
Yes.
Just asking on behalf of Strider, who might be wondering.
I'd say, Strider, for you, go with scented, but most everybody else, unscented. I know Strider. Guy's funky.
But I liked your actual sincere advice. Like, one thing I really try and look at with moving is it's like an opportunity for rebirth. It's just an opportunity to really, I think, make positive changes in your life, to think about how you want your life to be different and to do it. Because when you just have that massive change of moving from one place to another, I think you can leave behind like bad habits or things that were kind of holding you back from some of your happiness. It's just, I think it's easier to make that change when you're literally changing where you live.
That was beautiful.
Yeah.
I'm a handsome man.
I'm moved.
Untrue, but that's sweet, Dave, to say that. All right, next question. This is from Candace from Austin, Texas. Two-part question. Number one, what kind of dance moves are the most off the chain? That's a very good question. And second, does a person's age make a difference in how you'd answer this question? If so, please specify for the following age brackets. A, toddlers and children. B, teenagers. C, childless adults. D, moms and pops. E, old people. F, nursing home residents and or people in wheelchairs. So Candace is really into dance information.
I have some thoughts right off the bat.
Go
on
for
this, Candace. It's funny that you should ask this question, because I have lately been watching a lot of how-to videos on YouTube for how to dance for men. That is a true fact. I'm going to a dance party later this month, and I'm a little nervous, so I just thought I would jump on YouTube and you know, build my confidence a little bit.
Nice.
The first thing that I want to say about that is that there are so many dance how-to videos on YouTube. It's kind of amazing.
I love that.
Who are these guys who have multiple, like an ongoing series of how-to dance videos for guys like me?
I love it. So, that's my favorite thing I've learned all week, that there's a thriving genre of male how-to-dance videos on YouTube.
And for every one of them, there's a guy who needs to watch it, like me. You know, YouTube matches us. So, I think it's a great place. That's a great place to learn about what kind of dance moves are most off the chain, and to be able to watch someone do those dance moves and practice them from the privacy of your own home.
I will say I agree. Something that transformed my life, I watched someone perform like a how-to tutorial for moonwalking, and my life was never the same. I was like, what? Because Michael just did it. He never made the how-to video that I was aware of.
Right, right.
So, anyway, proceed.
That might be all I have to say about that. In terms of the age brackets, I think I can only speak to, you know,
teenagers and childless adults.
These videos that I've been watching have been, you know, men in their 20s and 30s who probably frequent dance clubs a lot. So
it's a shame there aren't more old people how to dance videos.
There might be.
They already know. They've got life experience. Right. But still, you mentioning Michael Jackson brings up a few years ago, I was in Manti, Utah for 4th of July. It's just a small town, but they have a little fair going on, and they have a stage where people get up and perform. And I was privileged to see a man dressed like Michael Jackson get up and dance. Just like amazing Michael Jackson moves for about 30 minutes. Like, he didn't sing. He just had the dance moves. And that's my answer for dance moves that are most off the chain, is that guy. It was amazing.
Was there music going on, or was it just him dancing?
No, he had Michael going, oh, okay. Of course. Like, he was playing whatever Michael song. And he had obviously watched quite a few YouTube tutorials and spent a lot of time dancing in front of a mirror, and he nailed it. Like, it was spot on. Mm. Everyone in Manti was, I mean, all 500 residents of Manti were just going insane for this kid.
That sounds really, really great. So, yeah. Candace, I think your question's answered. YouTube and a field trip to Manti, Utah appear to be in order. Yeah. Get educated. All right. So that is Ask Off the Chain. We're excited to answer your questions. If you have them, you can find us on our website and submit questions through the website, which is otc.awesomecity.org. The next topic I am really excited to hear both of your thoughts about. This is kind of we've started a new feature where it's called Expert Testimony, where we bring out somebody who's an expert in a thing. We want to talk about off-the-chain comics and graphic novels. These are a huge love for Dave, and they're also, I think, a passion for you, Oliver. How did each of you come to... I mean, both of you make comics, right?
Mm-hmm. Sure.
Putting words in Dave's mouth here. Why and how did you start?
Well, I've been drawing since I was a kid, with some gaps in the middle. And then I kind of got into poetry and was just writing for a while. And then I took a drawing class. And
where did you take the drawing class?
I took the drawing class here at UW-Madison, and it was a workshop with cartoonist and writer and all-around creativity magical guru Linda Berry. And that changed everything for me. I can now divide my life into before that class and after that class, to be honest. So I was already writing poetry pretty regularly when I took that workshop, but drawing all the time in that workshop really opened things up for me in terms of ways that words and pictures could work together. And now it's hard for me to do one without the other. Like, my experience of text now is that a picture is missing, and my experience of picture now is that words are missing. So comics were sort of a natural way to work out that new obsession.
Cool.
How about you, Dave?
I loved comic books from when I was very young. Like, the first things I ever read were comics, and I wouldn't read the words. I just flipped through them, and I'd say, oh, the Incredible Hulk, he's punching this guy now. So you didn't even have to read to be able to see it.
Yeah.
My older brother loved comics, and so he just infected me, and we would sit at the kitchen table with comics and just draw, or I'd try and draw the Hulk. I'd try and draw different stuff, and if I'm just sitting somewhere with a piece of paper, like, it's going to be completely filled with the Hulk or some kind of doodle, just because it's fun. It's a way to occupy my mind, keep me moving.
So I have a question for both of you, because you're more active visual artists than I am. I feel like a lot of the people that I know that are either cartoonists or artists have like a character that's like, I don't know if it's an obsession for them, but like you think of some artist and you think of like, this is the character, like when they just do their doodles or their free drawings, this character just appears over and over and over again. Is that true for either of you? And if so, what is that character?
Yeah, I've got one, definitely.
What is it?
Mine is a hangry ghost. Hangry being, you know, the combination of hungry and angry. and it's this little ghost doodle that I've considered getting as a tattoo. Hasn't happened yet, but I haven't ruled it out. So, yeah, the hangry ghost gets into all kinds of recurring adventures in my comics.
Wow. And you, Dave?
I draw faces, you know, like cartoon faces. Like, I'll just fill up, that's just what I do. I'll fill up a whole page of faces. People are like, why are you drawing all these different faces? It'll be any number of different kind of people. And I'm just like, I don't know. I'm drawing faces. It's what I do.
favorite drawing implements. What do you use to draw?
Anything Lately, it's been this blue Sharpie that I've managed. It kind of depends on how long I can keep track of one implement before I lose it.
Yeah.
Or send it through the laundry. So it's been a blue Sharpie lately. But I've also had fun experimenting with crayons, which are really difficult to return to as an adult in a way that is really interesting to me. Like, they break a lot, and they're very, like, the wax makes them very unpredictable in a way that I find really exciting. Like, I really like trying to see how much of a piece of paper I can cover with crayon, and I also really like it when they break.
Yeah, because there's a thickness and a lack of precision from a crayon that you don't expect from, like, a technical art implement.
Totally.
Huh.
For the past few years, I've just become more obsessed with children's books, and a look that I love in children's books is ink drawings that are colored by watercolor. Mm. So that's what I've been doing. The ink pen that you dip into actual ink and let it dry, and then watercolor. I just think it has such a pretty and unique look. That's what I try and do.
That's really interesting, too, because it's got that mix of hard lines with the soft color. It's a very cool kind of blend.
Yeah. That's cool that you use the ink pen that you dip, Dave. That's something that I've wanted to try and have not gotten into yet. But I'm glad you mentioned watercolor, which I forgot to mention, possibly because it was the one that was so obvious to me. I think I'm pretty sure that if you cut me open, my blood would be watercolor.
Wow.
So, yeah, it's also a fan.
Well, it's so cool because you do one of these ink drawings, and the drawing's okay, and you don't even have to watercolor it well. You don't have to be like excellent at watercoloring. You just throw it on there, and all of a sudden, what you've made looks fantastic,
it's
and
true.
You didn't even do anything.
Just the fact of color. Color and water, two amazing things on their own, and in combination, off the chain.
It's true. My friend Jack Bangeter, I've mentioned it before, but he's an artist, and every year for Christmas, we get one person in our family, and we have to make them a Christmas present. And I drew my sister one year, and I had Jack teach me how to paint, do watercolor, so I just painted a watercolor for my sister. And it was like, I was not a very talented artist, and I had never done watercolor before, but I made something that I thought looked pretty beautiful. It was really cool, and it was the medium, I think, that did most of the work rather than the artist, and I was really grateful.
I think it's a very forgiving medium. Yeah. It's great. I would anybody that's interested in art, I think, just pick up some watercolors and it's fun.
Definitely.
So for each of you, your favorite comic or graphic novel or book at two points of your life, I want to know your favorite when you were a child and your favorite as an adult.
When I was a kid, my favorite of all time was, of course, The Incredible Hulk. And I still remember this issue. It was one of the first I ever bought, where Hulk is launched into space and he meets Rocket Raccoon. It's pretty much loosely based on the Beatles song Rocky Raccoon. Like they totally stole the song and just made it a comic book with the Hulk, and I still love it.
Wow, I'll have to look that one up. The Hulk meets Rocket Raccoon.
Yeah, I think you'll really enjoy it.
Favorite for you from your childhood?
Yeah, my favorite when I was a kid was Family Circus, which I always want to call Family Circle, even though I know that that was like a magazine, right?
Yeah, right.
But I always want to call it Family Circle because every panel was in the shape of a circle, and I loved that so much, and I would get stacks and stacks of them from the public library, like as many as I could carry, and I would go sit in the window of Yin Ching Cafe, which was next door to the library, like as a child, and just eat garlic chicken without MSG, which I did not know what... I didn't know what MSG was at the time. I just knew that my mom told me to ask for it without it. And I would just sit in the window of this place and read Family Circus.
That's Arizona's own Bill Keen, Family Circus.
Huh.
From Arizona,
right.
Guys.
Okay.
Yeah.
My favorite as a child was definitely Kathy. And my favorite as an adult is still Kathy. Greatest cartoon ever made. Obviously, that's not true, but let's... Okay, favorite as an adult, though. What are you into now? Graphic novels, comics, best either book, artist, series?
Right now, I own all the Bone books, and I really like them, but I probably like them more because I've been reading them to my daughters, and they love Bone. It's like a fantasy adventure. These little Bone characters meet up with humans, and there's dragons, and it's just this expansive, fun story that's really funny, and my girls love Bone. There's an issue of it where there's a cow race. A grandma races a bunch of cows, and And my girls, every night now before they go to bed, we go out to the front sidewalk and we cow race. So, of course, it's my favorite.
That's great, Dave. You know, I have a friend that we'll have on the podcast at some point, but he gave me the full kind of collected bone stories, and I read them all and I thought, this was fantastic before I even had a kid. So yeah, they're great. Oliver?
Yeah, I think my favorite one at the moment, I'll approach the question that way, is The Hospital Suite by John Porcellino. And it's kind of a collection of three different projects of his put into one. And he's writing and drawing amazing comics about like working at a co-op and having a cat, just like life stuff, and also his experiences, some of his experiences with some mental health stuff and his love life. He's an amazing cartoonist. He was actually here on campus recently, and I got to go see him talk. And he described his process over the last few decades as one of just like trying to see how much he can go minimalist with his style, like really trying to figure out like the least possible or necessary number of lines to use in each panel to convey the scene he wants. So I'm really interested in his style and would highly recommend that book. It's from Drawn in Quarterly, which is a great press for independent comics.
Cool. This is great. I really feel like I've learned a lot. We have a regular segment now that we do just before the end of each show, and this is called Unchained Melodies. And Dave, you've got a little twist on Unchained Melodies for us this week.
Yeah, Steele. When I'm riding in my car with my wife, sometimes I'll just ask her like weird questions. Yesterday, I was asking her if you could choose, who would you rather go see? Lionel Richie in his prime. He's just released Dancing on the Ceiling. You're going to see him live. Or Phil Collins. He in his prime, he's just, the Take a Look at Me Now song is just launching. It's off the charts. Like, which guy do you want to see live? And she refused to answer. But one that she has answered is, if you could pick any musician, singer, and have his voice or her voice, obviously, which one would you pick? So that's the question that I'm putting forth to you guys today. Let's pick some voices.
Dave, this one was really, really hard for me. I think at different points in my life, I would have answered it really differently. And I was thinking about it, and I was thinking, well, there's all these people with like incredible voices. Like, I thought of Rufus Wainwright almost right away. I was like, I could listen to Rufus Wainwright sing a phone book. And I thought of all these great old soul singers. And I was like, well, clearly Al Green or Sam Cooke or Otis Redding or Nina Simone. Like, I would kill to have any of their voices. But I thought, in many ways, like their voices would be so incongruous with my own physical appearance and my body that I'd be like, I'd be appropriating a tradition that's not my own in a certain way. And then I also thought, okay, what's a voice? I wanted a voice that isn't like just like classically great, but a voice that's like a room stopper. That's the voice that I think that I would really want. And for me, the first thing that came to mind when I started thinking in those terms was Anthony Hegarty from Anthony and the Johnsons.
Oh, yeah.
Oh my goodness. I told you a couple weeks ago, Dave, I went to this concert in Prospect Park several years ago in New York. It was a Neil Young tribute concert. So I saw Cat Power with the cigarette dangling from her mouth. But the thing that blew my mind at this concert most was I'd never heard of Anthony before. This is like 2003 or something. He walks out and I just see kind of a ordinary kind of eccentric looking guy. I think he was bald at this time with blue eyeshadow. In other words, like a heavy set kind of person. And steps up to the mic and I have no idea what to expect. And when he started singing, like my bones just melted. It was so overpowering, so enchanting. And so for me, I would pick definitely Anthony and the Johnsons, or Anthony Hegarty from Anthony and the Johnsons. And the song I'll play is Dust and Water from his album The Crying Light.
Love the cold, love the way you're waiting. I love your kind patience. Dust and water and dust, water and dust. We never know how moon. Did you think I'd leave you here forever? Oh, no, no, no. I know. Understand the winter and dust, winter and dust.
I almost want to start crying every time I hear that. Just gives me shivers.
He's got such a distinct voice too. Like, you wouldn't confuse his voice with anybody else's.
Yeah.
Yeah.
He just owns that voice. So yeah. Man. Whoa. Anyway, that's my choice, Dave.
So what do you got, Oliver?
One of my picks, I have a special place in my heart for Prince, because aside from the obvious reasons, which is just, you know, that Prince is great, we also happen to be the same height. And I know this because, Dave, you don't know this about me, but Steele does. I'm really quite short. And so I may have, you know...
So is Dave. Dave's like about your height.
When I'm not on YouTube looking up videos for how to dance, I'm Googling famous short men so that I can feel better about my height.
It's not just Napoleon. It's not.
And that is how I discovered that Prince and I are about the same height. So on top of all the other reasons, this pick that I have, that I've been especially grooving on this week, is Kiss by Prince. You don't have to be beautiful to turn me on. I just need your body, baby, from dusk till dawn. You don't need experience.
That is one of the five greatest songs ever recorded, I'm convinced. That was the go-to dance party for my baby Cedar for like the first 6 months of his life. I literally played that song probably 500 times and danced with him.
You're doing parenting right.
That's what I feel like. I hope so.
Prince is also the answer for which musician you'd like to look exactly like.
Yeah, that's
tiny and extraordinarily handsome. Like, that guy is awesome.
Nobody can wear a bodysuit quite like Prince. All right, Dave, what's your first choice for this?
My first choice is, of course, it's Van Morrison.
Oh.
He's just got a powerful voice. You know, I'm just a weak, small man. If I could just fill up a room with the power that Van Morrison has, it would bring me so much joy. This song is one of my top five favorite songs of all time, certainly. And my girls request this by name. They say, we want the ballerina song.
No, y'all. That album, that Astral Weeks record, is, like, from beginning to end, maybe the greatest record ever recorded.
Yeah. It's so good. I want to read more about it, but I feel like a lot of the lyrics was just stream of consciousness. He just threw it down. He just threw it out there, and that was it. It was, like, one take, and he's got it.
And his voice carries it. He just propels you through a song. He doesn't even need a melody. Like, his voice is just an adventure. It's great.
Yep. Step right up. And step right up. Ballerina. Grab a catcher. Fly it so.
Oh, great choices. So those are our first round choices. We also came up with like a backup or a second choice for these, Dave. Do you mind if we run through those?
Yeah, I'd love to. Love to hear them.
Okay, so I said I need another showstopper voice, and I picked Anthony for the first one, and the second choice is a little bit of a, it's similar but different. This is a really compelling musician who died recently, kind of a tragic life and a troubled figure, but a guy who is a paraplegic named Vic Chestnut. Do either of you know him or his music?
Just by name, that's it.
Yeah, same.
Okay, Dave, you're going to love Vic Chestnut. He, this is a song about death, and it's called Flirted With You All My Life.
I am a man. I am self-aware. And everywhere I go, you're always right there with me. I flirted with you all my life, even kissed you once or twice. And to this day I swear it was nice, but clearly I was not ready. Touched a friend of mine, I thought I would lose my mind, but I found out with time that really I was not ready. No, no. Oh, death. Oh, death.
Like moans, oh death, and you're like, oh, everything melts inside of you and you're scared of breathing.
I love a good moan. You give me a good moan in a song, I'm gonna be happy.
Yeah. Choice number two, Oliver, what's your second choice?
Yeah, my second choice is another one I've just been listening to on pretty intense repeat, which is See You Again by Wiz Khalifa. But one of the reasons I picked it is this guy who features on it, Charlie Puth. He's the one singing in the beginning and also playing piano. And the song, Wiz Khalifa wrote it as a tribute to Paul Walker, the late Paul Walker.
Oh, thank you.
Do you know about this, Oliver? Dave worships at the throne of Paul Walker. Dave is obsessed with the Furious movies.
Perfect.
Paul Walker was the first inductee to the Off the Chain Hall of Fame.
That's awesome.
So,
great.
Wait, I've heard about the song, but I've never heard it. Super excited.
It's so good.
It's been a long day without you, my friend. And I'll tell you all about it when I see you again. We've come a long way from where we began. Oh, I'll tell you all about it when I see you again. When I see you again.
Damn, who knew? All the planes we flew, good things we've been through, that I'll be standing right here talking to you about another path. I know we love to hit the road and laugh, but something told me that it wouldn't last. Had to switch up, look at things different, see the bigger picture. Those were the days, hard work forever pays. Now I see you in a better place. See you in a better place. How can we not talk about family when family's all that we got? Everything I went through, you were standing there by my side. And now you gon' be with me for the last ride.
It's been a long day without you, my friend.
Are you crying, Dave?
I am.
I do have goosebumps. I love it. That's my new soundtrack.
Awesome.
man, that I have a huge soft spot for falsettos. noticed I made a bunch of mixtapes for Laurel, and like every single song was just a guy who broke into falsetto at some point. I'm like, man, all these songs have something in common. But he really can soar on those high notes. I know. That was gorgeous.
The falsetto and the piano. I have a soft spot for piano, and the combination on there is just like, ugh.
That's melting. Yeah. That's good.
I've got one last one, and I did it, Steel. I went there. I don't know which of the Righteous Brothers voices I want. I guess I didn't want both. I want to have both their voices at the same time. A while before I got married, someone gave me advice. They said, every night you need to romance your wife. And I don't know exactly what he meant by that, but what I took that to mean is every night I needed to stand somewhere, hold my wife close, and sing her this song in her ear. And it worked. We're still in love.
Oh, my Lord, my darling, I'm hunger for your touch. Oh, Lord, lonely time.
That, my friends, was Unchained Melodies. All right, so we're going to wrap up today, as we always do, with our favorite segment, or my favorite segment, Dave's least favorite segment. It's called Book Wisdom, where we share a brief excerpt from some piece of literature that's moved us in some way in our life. And we're lucky we have Oliver. He's going to share something with us for Book Wisdom today.
Yeah. The section I'm going to read is from one of my favorite books, The Phantom Tollbooth. And Milo and the Watchdog have just left the doldrums and are on their way to Dictionopolis when Milo has asked about the Watchdog, whose name is Tok, his strange name. He asks about the story of his name. So what I'm going to read is the Watchdog's answer. When my brother was born, the first pup in the family, my parents were overjoyed and immediately named him Tick in expectation of the sound they were sure he'd make. On first winding him, they discovered to their horror that instead of going tick, 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 he went tock, 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 tock. They rushed to the Hall of Records to change the name, but too late. It had already been officially inscribed and nothing could be done. When I arrived, they were determined not to make the same mistake twice, and since it seemed logical that all their children would make the same sound, they named me Tock. Of course, you know the rest. My brother is called Tick because he goes tock, 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 tock. And I am called Tock because I go tick, 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 tick. And both of us are forever burdened with the wrong names. My parents were so overwrought that they gave up having any more children and devoted their lives to doing good work among the poor and hungry. That's all I've got for you today from the Phantom Tollbooth.
I love it.
I'm smiling, so thank you for sharing it.
Good, that makes three of us.
Great passage, great story. I think, Oliver, we need to run probably. So thank you for coming. This was
a pleasure. Thanks so much, Dave and Steele, for having me on the show this morning. It was a great way to wake up and start the weekend.
Yeah, it's nice talking with Oliver. Hopefully we'll have you on again. I think it was fun.
Off the chain. It's off the chain.
Hey, Stillman, you're looking handsome today, man.
I do my best work on Fridays because I shower the night before, so I'm just up and ready to go. you sound a little more deeper voice than I'm used to, Dave.
It might be the 7 in the morning thing, Steele.